Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. And I'll tell you so.
Hi, I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to a different type of program today. Why is it different? Because I'm broadcasting live via Skype. I'm in my little studio here down in Texas, where I'm overseeing a small clinical study on the issue, can we reverse the aging process? Can we slow down the aging process? Can we create young stem cells in older people? The average person in the study is a senior citizen. We've already completed the first part of the study, and that was back in October, November, and then another month at home, and we had phenomenal results. But the people who were heading that study said, you have to duplicate it to show it's not a fluke. Fine. So we're in the duplicating stage now. We're 3 weeks in, and I'll tell you some of the outcomes in a little later on in the program. So here I am, about a foot away from the camera, and with four bright lights over my head, no makeup. So this is what you see. This is who I am. Normally, when people are filming in the studio, they use a soft lens. We don't. They use a makeup. We don't. And so happy to share this with you. Now, also today, beyond our health and nutrition, we normally start our program with, I'll give you some of the latest suggestions when it comes to the coronavirus. Then we're going to have three video audio clips. One will be about, do young people really respect freedom of speech? A person went on campuses and asked questions. The vast majority of people said, yeah, they definitely believe in freedom of speech, their freedom of speech, not anyone they disagree with. So that's important. Separately, we're going to talk about why are so many people offended by everything today. And third, we're going to give you something that heads up a warning. If you're easily offended, don't watch it. Don't listen to the segment with George Carlin, because George Carlin is famous for offending a lot of people. But for me and others in my generation, he was a cultural hero because he was the anti-establishment person. And he was dead on accurate in his attacking the warmongers from the Vietnam War right up through the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he made fun of everything, himself and everyone. And everyone who liked him enjoyed it because he had that special blend of being completely honest without any self-censoring. But today, you look around, with the exception of just a handful of comedians, everyone self-censors. Well, when you self-censor, what's going to happen is the truth of what you really believe is going to be, it's not going to be brought forward. So then what are we supposed to believe? The sanitized, pasteurized, homogenized, blanderized humor that to me is not funny. I mean, Jonathan Winters was funny. Don Rinkles was funny, and he insulted everybody. And people died laughing. They were so hilarious. Robin Williams was the same. Richard Pryor, Dick Gregory. And then going back further, Lenny Bruce. So that's going to be George Carlin. But a heads up, if you are offended, don't watch it, because it'll offend you. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. And the first study up is a good study. It's from University of Medical Sciences in Iran, and they're talking about the effects of being able to deal with colitis and the itises, things that happen in millions of Americans, our gastrointestinal system. This is for people that end up with diarrhea and don't know why. It's not from food poisoning. And they end up with all forms of allergies, and they have abdominal pain and cramping and bloating. And so they get put on medications, which themselves disrupt what is called peristalsis. Now, peristalsis is the wave-like rhythmic movement of electrical charges hitting your intestines so that your food passes through your intestines as it normally should. Now, there are a few things that can adversely affect normal digestion. First, we're not chewing our food thoroughly. We seem to be very impatient. We're not even tasting the food. The average person has to smother whatever they're eating, whether it's a hot dog or hamburger or a pasta, with lots of seasonings. A lot of these seasonings have monosodium glutamate, and this is a taste enhancer. Originally, this was common in foreign dishes, East Asian dishes, but then it migrated here. Well, for those of us who are chefs, and I'm a gourmet vegan chef, I would never think of using these enhancers. Using herbs like basil and dill and garlic and oregano and thyme and mint, rosemary, the turmeric, saffron, bay leaves, this is where you can impart seasoning, providing you're not cooking something at a high temperature. But everyone I knew growing up in a small town in West Virginia was told, take your time, chew your food. So we did. We didn't have a lot of choice because our mothers were the ones who ran the house and gave us our instructions in home etiquette, social etiquette, and morality, and these virtues that we value today, not so much. And so we sat there. If I didn't want to eat something because I didn't like it, the rule was, you sit here till it's finished. Clean your plate. And I was stubborn, but my mom was more stubborn. And so I sat there, sometimes for an hour or two, and then I'd relent and I'd eat it. And so we didn't overeat. Portion size was important. As a result, even amongst the working class, and we were working class people, small house, and the poorer class, those people did not overeat. Obesity was rare. In fact, in my graduating class, I only knew three people that were overweight, or what we would call obese today. Today, it would be about 70%. So those were good statements, because as my mom said, your stomach doesn't have teeth. So they masticated, and now we know they were right. Under your tongue are two little holes, and those holes secrete two enzymes, ptyalin and amylase. They ensalivate your food as you're chewing and you're masticating, and you create what is called bolus. And this is where you have everything kind of broken down mechanically, and then enzymatically, it's to convert highly starchy food into simpler sugars, from polysaccharides, meaning many, to monosaccharides, meaning singular. It allows better digestion. Also, we were instructed by my grandmother or my great aunt, don't drink with a meal unless the meal is the drink. For example, a soup you could have, but don't have something on top of that. You can have it before or after. Mind you, these were not scientists, but they had a wisdom and they had cause and effect. They knew this passed down from other generations. So we would eat a meal. Later, an hour later, you could have a beverage. And then my mother instructed us, go for a walk. Go for a walk for half an hour around the block a couple times. And we would. Now, we were the only people I knew who were doing that. A lot of people would overeat and then go lay on a couch. Not a good idea. And it was important to not overeat. We're supposed to be strong and lean. And at least in my family, everybody was athletic, and they were strong and lean. My mother, in high school, was a cross-country runner and hurdler. And I can remember one summer when my mother and I was just a teenager, we went out to the country, and we ran across the pasture, and there were four fences, and she hurdled all of them. I didn't. I'd have fallen, bust my butt. But she did that, and I'm watching her, and she was faster than me, and I was very athletic, and I just laughed. I couldn't stop smiling. I was so proud of her. Now, later, when she hit 40, suddenly, I come home one day, and her hair is in one of those kind of like bob things, and with all this hairspray on it, and it was gray, and yet her hair wasn't gray. And I said, Mom, what happened to that long hair that was down past your shoulders, that nice auburn look? And she says, in a small town, you don't want to stick out. You want to get along. And so I just cut my hair and I dyed it to kind of fit in with all the other people. I said, but you're not all those other people. If they don't have hair as thick and nice as yours, why adapt to them? I learned a lesson. It wouldn't be present, obvious then, but later it would come back about when we adapt to fit in, sometimes that adaptation becomes maladaptation. And therefore, we lose the uniqueness of who we really are and what makes us different. So we're not all clones of each other. And yet, the Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, the movie was with Gregory Peck, showed how people want to become like everyone else. You don't want to stand out. You don't want to be the focus of gossip. And so that's what we did. But anyhow, I can tell you that I learned the best eating habits, put my fork or spoon down in between each bite to make sure I thoroughly masticated my food, not to drink with meals, and not to overeat. Those were the lessons that I learned. I've just passed them on. I didn't create them. My mother did. So if you want to have healthier digestion, if you want to have less allergies, then build up your immune system by eating healthy foods. Stay away from the foods that we know trigger allergies, which can then manifest in your gut. Stay away from dairy, fried foods, animal proteins, simple sugars, and carbonated beverages. They're not good for you. They're terrible for digestion. And eat living foods, lots of it. Have yourself a glass of cabbage juice. That's terrific. Both it has prebiotics in it, which is good for recolonization of the bacteria in your gut, but it also helps heal ulcers, especially ulcers from Helicobacter E. pylori, which is a bacterium, and it can lead in time to stomach cancer. So that's what this study showed. Another study is that drinking green tea every day can really extend your lifespan, and it can also help you with food allergies. Now, there are two studies I want to cite today, both published in peer-reviewed journals, both from respected institutions. And in other cultures, drinking green tea, oolong tea, that's normal. That comes every day. People drink their tea, sometimes 4 or 5 cups a day. Now we know from thousands of studies that that green tea also has what are called catechins. Catechin, that's C-A-T, catechin. And that is extremely healing. So it helps your digestion. It helps the stomach, the lining of the gastrointestinal tract. So, and it also helps us live a longer life. Just one piece of the puzzle put together. So green teas help with dementia. They turn off inflammation in the brain. Green tea also helps with autoimmune conditions. And now we're seeing an epidemic with this latest study. More Americans than ever before are suffering from autoimmune disease, which is a condition or series of conditions where the body begins to attack itself. Why would it do that? Because we're eating the worst diet in American history. Every commercial on television, just watch them. They're all about junk food of one type or another. Not only junk food of one type or another, but huge amounts of that food. Now it's not uncommon, and I predicted this 10 years ago. I said, it won't be enough when you've got 5 or 6 companies competing to get someone in to have a hamburger. They'll have to add something, what's called differentiation. So the differentiation, then they begin to add cheese to the hamburger. Then they added 2 patties of hamburger, the quarter pounder. Then they began to add bacon on top of the beef. And again, that's a carcinogenic food. It's dangerous for us. It shortens your lifespan. Then they began to add cheese on top of the bacon. Then now they've got hash browns, French fries on top of that. And then they give you what is called Canadian bacon and American bacon. And all this is way too much protein, way too much. And the body cannot store protein. So there's a process of deamidization where you break down the protein. You can't store it. It's just excess calories. And in all this protein is fat, lots of it, saturated fat. And one particular type of saturated fat is called arachidonic acid. That is a pro-inflammatory. That causes what are called cytokine storms, meaning massive amounts of inflammatory agents getting into your joints and causes joint pain. If after a meal you do this, clear your throat. If you have clogged nose, if you have any form of chest congestion, if you have pain in your joints, there's a high probability that you were eating allergens, and none of that's good. So then you're eating so many bad foods to your immune system tips, and now it's out of control. So detoxification with chlorophyll-rich foods, spirulina, chlorella, sea vegetables, miso soup, recolonizing your gut with probiotics and prebiotics, having green juices like celery, green apple, and lemon juice, terrific for you. But you have to do it. You can't just eat bad foods, have autoimmune conditions, and just take drugs that are COX-2 inhibitors, meaning they're anti-inflammatories, what are called non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Because then when you start taking aspirin and ibuprofen, and Tylenol, these all have side effects. For example, one of them, aspirin, has led to about 24,000 minimally deaths per year. Also, aspirin will destroy vitamin C, folic acid, B1, B6, and B12. Those are the nutrients to hold down homocysteine. And when homocysteine is elevated, you're more at risk for a heart attack or stroke. So to live a longer life and help prevent a stroke or heart attack, have vitamin C, a B complex every day, vitamin D, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10. These are important for you. And if the average American is not consuming these, or if they are, they're consuming them in association with an unhealthy diet. The justification is, well, I can eat what I want because I'm taking, you know, my vitamins. Doesn't work. Another study shows that green tea can help prevent dementia, which is, there are many types of dementia. The worst is Alzheimer's disease. And this is from the National University of Singapore. So once again, three separate studies just out today showing why we should be drinking green tea for our immune system, to turn off inflammation throughout our body, in our muscles, in our joints, have us live a longer life, prevent cancer, and now this latest one, help prevent dementia and Alzheimer's. Also, there's a new study out by Vanderbilt University that talks about fasting or intermittent fasting. And they're suggesting that if you fast at night, you're going to burn more calories. You can help lower your incidence of body mass index, or the fat on your body, and you can help lose weight even while you're sleeping. That's good news. Now here, as an example, we end our day, as far as food and juices, around 6 o'clock. The next morning, we're all up and we're out doing our road work, power walking or biking, at 7. We're in the gym by 8, and we have our breakfast, which is generally smoothies with protein and various phytonutrients. And then we start our day taking art classes. We have, just so happens, three of the attendees who are also in the anti-aging study happen to be very talented artists. And one of them is the chairman of the department of art of a major university, and herself an acclaimed artist. So each one is teaching a different way of doing artwork each day. People really enjoy it. And then they get to take home whatever they've created. And a lot of people think, well, I'm not an artist. I couldn't do anything. Oh, yeah, they can. And these people guide them through that process. Now, a few things that we've found work that help us in our journey. And that is that when we have air pollution, and this is a brand new study, whether it's in China, where over a minimum of 1 million Chinese die each year just from air pollution. In fact, when I was out in Los Angeles last to do a lecture, the person who picked me up was a professor at UCLA. Now, it turns out his daughter was with him. She had just returned the day before from Shanghai. And she said that for one whole week, the air was so polluted that when she held her hand out in front of her like this, she couldn't see her fingers. The pollution was that dense. Now, of course, you see people wearing masks there long before the coronavirus because of air pollution, because the Chinese were more interested in growing their economy and building entire buildings from beginning to end in 14 days. from beginning to end, that's how much power the Chinese government has to dictate how things get done and how quickly they get done. In any case, along the way, this massive industrialization, in effect, a new industrial revolution has been occurring there with high tech. But also, they have 300 million more people this year eating meat than they would have traditionally. Because traditionally, people have meat, but because it's so expensive, they generally have it less frequently. Now that more people are highly educated, their income has increased, they want meat all the time. In fact, get this, the average educated Chinese person had 300% more meat than the average American of the same social background and educational status. We're already eating too much animal protein, and one of the byproducts of all that animal protein is industrial farming pollution. So there's massive pollution. Also, there's all kinds of viruses. Now, we don't know absolutely where the coronavirus came from. Was it, were they working on some kind of vaccine in a laboratory? And did that get out? And then did that infect bats? And then the bats, remember, bats can live off the blood of humans or animals. Now, what that would mean would be that if, and I say this if, because we haven't absolutely proved it yet, but it's an interesting hypothesis, if the bats that end up infecting the food that humans ate, if those bats were able to infect pigs, and pigs are, have an immune system very similar to humans, then that means that the hundreds of millions of pigs that are raised each year in China for slaughter, that could have started an epidemic or continued to carry it forward. And repeatedly, there have been massive kill-offs of pigs where they were shown to be infection-ridden, and those infections could impact humans. What's the solution? It's simple. We need a nation that is aware of the cost to our environment and to our body of eating a meat-based diet. We should be eating a plant-based diet because all the science and the peer-reviewed literature supports the health of a plant-based diet. None of the science supports the health benefits of an animal-based diet. There's no science, independent science, showing the benefits of sugar in the American diet. There are a lot of studies showing its danger to our health, and yet we continue to eat products that are not good for us. So if we want to save the environment, in part, aside from planting trees, stop buying stuff we don't need, stop buying things because of obsolescence, you know, people today can go out and buy a shirt or a dress, wear it, and throw it away. It's cheaper than taking it to a dry cleaners. So we're used to throwing stuff away without thinking, where does it go? Where does it end up? In landfills, in the ocean? Yeah, that great plastic patch in the Pacific, three times larger than Texas. We did that. We're not thinking through on issues, and we should be. Also, pollution impacts public health in the United States as well. But we've got this idea, as long as we don't see it, it can't be bad. Nothing could be further from the truth. Because particulate matter that you can't see gets into your lungs. In New York City, I have windows that are sealed. So 1 week, I turned off my air purifier in my apartment. At the end of that week, all the surface areas were covered with a little gritty pollution matter. I wiped it all down and cleaned it up. But that's what you're breathing. And think of how few people in the city or any city have a state-of-the-art air purification system. We open windows and doors because we want the fresh air, and that's good, but it's better to be out inside that environment, going to a park or going to a place where we're not running into other people, and we can breathe deep and breathe safely. One of the most toxic places you ever spend time is in your own home, when you realize that we have between 400 and 800 chemicals in our body, from microwaving something in a plastic bowl. The plastic then leaches its chemicals right into the food. We eat the food. You know, cooking like a baked potato wrapped in aluminum foil. When you're heating that aluminum, particulate matter goes into the potato. You eat the potato, you get that. And drinking water that's very polluted, even if it meets certain standards. So pollution can help harm you. Now, what if pollution also is at a high level in a person's body and they're exposed to the coronavirus? New research indicates that you're more susceptible to getting sick and dying if you have both pollution and the coronavirus. So one more reason to wear a mask and to be conscious. For example, here's the mask that I'm wearing. This is a mask. It is a, now this is an N95 mask, and this is a good one. And what I do is I spray hydrogen peroxide on the inside and hydrogen peroxide on the outside, the straps, and also after that dries in alcohol. Now let it sit overnight, and that way it's disinfected. If I were going to go on an airplane, I would spray colloidal silver on the inside and on the outside. That will help also kill a lot of bacteria and viruses. Just some simple things we should be doing. Now we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going directly into about 2 minutes of a clip where students at a prestigious institution are asked, do you believe in freedom of speech? Or do you believe that we should censor words that are considered offensive or trigger words? And hear for yourself. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Occidental College in California is considering instituting a system for students to report so-called microaggressions perpetrated against them on campus. Microaggressions are statements that intentionally or unintentionally send a negative message related to someone's membership in a marginalized group. We visited campus to ask Occidental students if they agree that the following statements could be considered microaggressions. They've all been documented as such on a college campus somewhere in the United States. Have you heard of the term microaggression?
Yeah, that's a big thing on campus. If we see large-scale violence, we can name that as a macroaggression. But the way that we devalue that violence, the way that we silence that violence, that's a microaggression.
I'm asking an Asian American, where were you born?
Yes.
Very, very contextual, you know?
That's not a microaggression. That's just asking where they were born.
Telling a black student that he or she is very articulate.
That is, yeah. Yes.
What about saying all lives matter?
I think because the history behind Black Lives Matter, it's kind of like appropriating a statement that was created specifically to talk about black lives being lost to police brutality. So that is.
I'm colorblind. I don't see race.
Possibly.
I believe the most qualified person should get the job.
Qualifications aren't really the only thing you should consider when hiring someone.
If you're saying that the most qualified person is someone who is not a minority or not of a religion you believe in, then yes, that'd be a microaggression.
Saying God bless you after somebody sneezes.
Oh, that would be a microaggression because of different religions.
Yeah, it could be a microaggression to someone who doesn't believe in God.
I think that the harm there is relatively minimal.
So there's still some harm, though.
I would say there's not harm, but if it's being asked, clearly someone found
it. Maybe mini microaggression.
Perhaps.
Do you see any downside to creating a database full of statements that faculty and students make to each other in terms of protecting free speech values on campus?
Not in terms of protecting free speech value, but the idea of a database certainly raises eyebrows.
So yes, we do need a system where we can report our experiences and that, like, a system of education or whatever.
I would say it's good to have it in place, but to have like harsh actions against it, it wouldn't be beneficial to student life.
It'll make a safer environment. So I fully support the council, and I think it's really great that the faculty is taking this initiative because it wasn't one of the demands. The faculty on their own said, like, we're going to do this because we believe it's what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm. So they went above and beyond to police hate speech.
I think so in some respects.
Now, once we've seen that, yeah, they want freedom of speech, their freedom of speech, but what if I want to talk about the dangers of genetically engineered foods, or why I'm opposed to mandatory vaccines and believe in freedom of choice. And these people would be the first to line up to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And you can bet that that's going to be fast-tracked, and they're not going to have quality studies on it. They will not compare it to a real placebo, a salt saline solution. And yet they'll think the government is doing the right thing because the celebrities, you know, the dumbest culture in America, they're convincing people that follow the government. It has your best interests at stake. Really? Same government that got us into Vietnam, same government got us into Afghanistan, same government that got us into Iraq, same government that destroyed Gaddafi and the number one nation in longevity and healthcare, education in Africa, Libya. Is that the same experts we should be trusting? I don't think so. I'd rather think for myself and then verify what others say. So now we're going to go to a longer clip. Interesting. Whether you agree or disagree, just listen and see if there are any things that this person is saying that make sense to you. If not, that's fine. And this is about why people are offended by everything today.
Everyone is getting offended by everything. Whether you have been witness to it or not, there is an ever-growing number of ultra-politically correct far-left militants that are hell-bent on campaigning for a cause for people whom they've never even met and who never asked them to campaign for them in the first place. And no, this isn't about politics. It's far more serious than that. This is about maintaining our freedoms and rights as a human race. And no, sadly, I'm not exaggerating. If you're not quite sure what the hell I'm going on about, let me tell you about a fairly recent case that just goes to prove my point about how deadly political correctness can be. In November 2009, a psychologist working in the US Army, Nidal Malik Hassan, opened fire on the other troops in the base while shouting, "God is great" in Arabic. 13 people were killed. It was soon discovered that the Pentagon knew all about Hassan's radical ideologies way before this act of terrorism. They were aware of a whole bunch of emails he had been sending to other radical Muslims. Even his own colleagues at the army base had expressed their discomfort about him to others, saying that he was, quote unquote, a ticking time bomb. So how on earth could the US government and the senior army management simply allow this horrific mass murder to take place? Well, because the powers that be within the US Army were too afraid of being accused of racially profiling someone to take any action against him. And so because of the unyielding pressure of political correctness in the modern age, 13 people tragically had to die. The effects of the over-offended can be seen strongly in comedy. The 60s, 70s and 80s were full of original, geniusly witty TV comedies that have yet to be bettered, such as Monty Python, Fawlty Towers, Blackadder, Yes Minister, and a handful of others which I'm sure you all have fond memories of, but there are too many to name here. But each and every one of these shows delved into the realm of what overly sensitive people today might wrongly call sexist, homophobic, or racist. One notable example is what many people consider to be the greatest 30 minutes of TV comedy ever written and performed, the Fawlty Towers episode, The Germans. The whole 30 minutes is stuffed full of non-PC jokes that wouldn't dare to be part of any contemporary TV sitcom. One particular scene shows a resident of Fawlty Towers, Major Gowan, using racial slurs against West Indians and Germans. Sadly, due to the increasingly sensitive nature of some TV viewers today, this scene is now completely cut by the BBC from the episode whenever they air it on TV. But what most people fail to see, of course, is that the writers John Cleese and Connie Booth are by no means supporting such racial slurs. They are, in fact, doing the opposite. They are making a joke out of the Major's, a completely fictional character, ignorance and prejudice towards other cultures and races. And that is just totally fine. Because racism is wrong, and we should make fun of those who practice it. So, how is it that I can so confidently say that such TV moments were categorically not racist? Well, for one simple reason. It is comedy. comedy should have no bounds. When horrendous, unthinkable things happen, such as war, the Holocaust, slavery, disease, and oppression, it is human nature to want to make things better. Unless, of course, you are the one causing suffering. And we can often make good of any bad situation by simply having a laugh. During the war and the Great Depression, comedy sitcoms and talk shows were broadcast on radio stations all day long, every day. Such shows would often attract audiences of 30 million plus listeners. 30 million people wanted to listen to comedy in the middle of a war. Because when the chips are down and all seems lost, it's the small things that really matter. It might just be that moment of laughter one gets from a comedy sketch on the radio. It might trivialise the seemingly insurmountable issues you are facing by poking fun at them and so making them seem just a little bit less horrible. And slightly more tolerable. Of course, being intentionally prejudiced towards a specific group of people is a horrible thing. But when we are forced to conform to extreme political correctness, it only strips away our freedom of speech and our ability to express ourselves. Today's stand-up comedians have fallen victim to the ever-tightening PC noose around their creative necks. More so than ever, comedians are having to censor their own material, making it less offensive and more politically correct, just to appease what many journalists are calling the snowflake generation. Certain British comedians such as Ricky Gervais, Jimmy Carr and Frankie Boyle have been reprimanded repeatedly by British television regulators Ofcom after making offensive jokes on television because the regulators have simply been forced to do so after numerous complaints by the over-offended TV viewers who feel that they are entitled to restrict a comedian's freedom of speech. And even more frighteningly, the issue is intensified by the fact that the snowflake generation are using social media en masse, such as Twitter, to publicly ridicule and beat down any comedian who uses anti-PC language in their comedy. And so many comedians are too afraid to write the material that they truly want to. They are scared of what the public reaction may be if their content isn't entirely family friendly. And how drastically sad is that? But the slightly ironic thing is that the snowflake crowd are in many ways doing the complete opposite of what they seek to achieve. Instead of censoring offensive comedy, some comedians are now purposely being as offensive as possible with their material in a backlash to the easily offended populace as a way to fight back against liberal oppression and say that it's okay to be a little offensive from time to time. Because we are humans. We are not perfect, and sometimes joining in on a joke, even if it's at one's own expense, can be a most joyous thing. But sadly, there is also a dark side to comedians pushing their offensive humour as far as it can go, because it tends to skew more towards simple-minded toilet humour, slapstick, and an overwhelming amount of forced bad language and sex jokes. This all takes the place of what previously could have been well-thought-out, witty humour that uses offence as a natural and organic part of the joke, instead of being forced into the material in an unnatural, belligerent, and obviously artificial fashion. Alas, sadly, no matter how hard comedians attempt to fight back against the snowflakes, the reality is that this crowd does wield power, because of advertisers. Today, so many people are so quick to lodge complaints against television broadcasters and other companies that TV executives are now too afraid to invest money into original writing talent just because it may be too edgy or offensive for certain demographics of their viewership. And the problem is made even worse as TV broadcasters are held at the mercy of their advertisers. Today, advertisers recognise the power of the snowflake crowd and their ability to rant and rave on social media about their brand if they are seen as being slightly offensive or prejudiced. And so, advertisers will point blank refuse to advertise on shows that could be construed as offensive by pretty much anyone. And if the advertising money isn't there, then a show will never be broadcast or made, no matter how good it could be. We've all seen this exact same issue here on YouTube in recent years. To protect advertisers and their all-important revenue streams, YouTube has introduced new measures to aggressively censor any content creator that produces slightly edgy content by stripping away their advertising revenue, their bread and butter. I make a lot of videos about history, and war is a prominent and natural feature of our history, which should be openly talked about so we can learn from our mistakes. Not to mention, it's really interesting. But any video that so much mentions the word war has been entirely stripped of advertisements, at least in my case, because God forbid someone out there is offended by a recount of accurate historical events. But we can't blame YouTube or even the advertisers for this mass censorship. It really isn't their fault. They are just responding to what the public wants, to protect their own revenue, and any business would do that. It is the easily offended, the complainers, those that are quick to reprimand people who seek to speak freely and unimpeded, that are the ones truly responsible. They are the rotten core, the true cause of what has to inevitably be a rapid decline in creativity. But is it really that wrong to be offended? No, of course it's not. Everyone gets offended from time to time. It is natural, it is human nature to take a dislike to comments or actions that cause us upset. The public have always taken offence. That's not new. What is new and what is the true problem today is people's feeling of entitlement that they believe is given to them by being offended. Because many millennials, especially in the West, have grown up in a time free of violent war, free of oppression and poverty, they have never known what it's like to not have everything, to not get what they want. This has instilled some people with a feeling of gross entitlement, a feeling that them being offended actually means something. Well, let me tell you straight. Being offended doesn't mean anything. It's a natural human response, and it's okay to be offended or even disgusted at other people's actions, but it absolutely does not give you the right to control how others behave and talk. If someone calls you stupid, you rightly should be offended, but that doesn't mean you can start a campaign to prevent people from using the word stupid. That would be stupid, and it's also a little something we like to call oppression. Don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about every young person out there, far from it. I'm simply talking about a small minority, but as is often the case in life, it's the few that spoil it for the many. But why is being so openly offended and making sure that everyone possible knows how utterly offended you are such a bad thing? Well, there is a fundamental problem with being offended and making a big deal of it. Offence is subjective. What each of us is offended by is vastly different from person to person. What offends us depends on our social and economic background, our religious views or lack of, the friendships you've had, how you were brought up, where you live, your political affiliation, your ethnicity, sexuality, age, gender, even your diet. And just because you are offended by a specific thing, it does not mean that the rest of the world should be, because we are all unique and varied. And if we weren't, then wouldn't we all be exactly the same and have the same beliefs? And that doesn't sound like much fun, does it?
Welcome back. Hope you had some interesting insights from that. And finally, we're going to end our show today, but I'm warning you in advance, George Carlin, his humor that many of us appreciate, a lot of people don't. So if you don't like George Carlin or you think you'd be offended, don't watch it. But for those of you who are not offended and appreciate George Carlin, here it is.
But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some floating around this country. Dumb. Yeah. Now, obviously, that doesn't include this audience. I understand that. You seem intelligent and perceptive, but the rest of them, holy jumping. Dumber than a second coat of paint. And this ain't just ranting and raving. This ain't just blowing off steam. I got a little evidence to support my claim. It just seems to me, that only a really low IQ population could have taken this beautiful continent, this magnificent American landscape that we inherited. Well, actually, we stole it from the Mexicans and the Indians, but hey, it was nice when we stole it. It looked pretty good. It was pristine. Paradise. Have you seen it lately? Have you taken a good look at it lately? It's embarrassing. Only a nation of unenlightened half-wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall. A big f***ing shopping mall. You know that? That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just fucking dandy. They think it is cool as can be because Americans love the mall. They love the mall. That's where they get to satisfy their two most prominent addictions at the same time, shopping and eating. Millions of semi-conscious Americans day after day shuffling through the malls, shopping and eating, especially eating. Americans love to eat. They are fatally attracted to the slow death of fast food. Hot dogs, corn dogs, triple bacon, cheeseburgers, deep fried butter dipped in pork fat and cheese whiz, mayonnaise soaked, barbecued mozzarella, patty melts. Americans will eat anything, anything, anything. If you were selling sauteed raccoons on a stick, Americans would buy them and eat them, especially if you dipped them in butter and put a little salsa on them. This country is big time, pig time. Forget the bald eagle. You know what the national emblem of this country ought to be? A big bowl of macaroni and cheese. A big bowl, because everything in this country is king size. King size, extra large, and super jumbo. Especially the fucking people. Have you seen some of the people in this country? Have you taken a good look at some of these big fat motherfuckers walking around? Big fat. Oh my God. Huge piles of redundant protoplasm lumbering through the malls like a fleet of interstate buses. The people in this country are immense, massive bellies, monstrous thighs, and big fat f***. And if you stand there for a minute and you look at one of them, you begin to wonder, how does this woman take f***? How does she shoot? And even more frightening, how does she wipe? Can she even locate her? She must require assistance. Are paramedics trained in this field? And standing right next to her, of course, with a plate full of nachos and a mouthful of pie, is her clueless fucking husband, Joe Sixpack. With his monstrous swollen beer belly hanging dangerously out over his beer belt buckle, this guy ain't seen his dick since the Nixon administration. And if you stand there and you look at the two of them, you begin to wonder to yourself, do these people f***? Is this man actually capable of f***ing this woman? It doesn't seem structurally possible that these two people could achieve penetration. Maybe they're in that Cirque du Soleil or something. I'm telling you, the people in this country every one of them is 50 pounds overweight. They are gargantuan. And in the summertime, God help us, in the summertime, they all want to wear short pants. Jesus, Lord, protector of all that is good and holy, deliver me from fat people in short pants. They all got short pants, big bellies, fat thighs, and dumb kids. Short pants, big bellies, fat thighs, and dumb kids. Every one of them's got two dumb-ass kids with them. And the whole family is wearing T-shirts, and every one of them's got the same T-shirt. I'm with stupid. Apparently, in this country, the stupids are an extended family. And besides wearing them T-shirts, everyone in the family's got on a backpack. They got a backpack strapped to their back so they can carry around lots of stupid And the reason they got to carry their stupid strapped to their backs is because their hands must remain free at all times to hold food. And to get that food up to the mouth where it gets shoveled in with all the rest of the disgusting they ate that day. And another reason for the backpacks is these people are going to buy even more stupid. They ain't got enough stupid shit at home. They just had a stupid sale. They ain't got to buy more. They're going to go out in the parking lot and stuff this stuff into the big, fat, ugly, oversized SUV that's got plenty of room in it. Plenty of room in it for stupid shit and lots of room left over for these big, fat, ugly motherfuckers to get them home. Stopping, of course, for jelly roll and fried dough. These people are efficient, professional, compulsive consumers. It's their civic duty, consumption. It's the new national pastime, fuck baseball. It's consumption. The only true, lasting American value that's left, buying things. Buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. Money they don't have on things they don't need so they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally, and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They said we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that, and the kids still can't pass the test. They say, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. And that's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a fucking pencil. Got a pencil? Get the fuck in there, it's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education! Politicians know that word, they use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing fucking ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the... They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 f***ing years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly your jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
George Carlin would not be invited to any university or college today. And probably not on any more television specials. You'd have to see him in some out-of-the-way place, you know, this quiet, but like comedy clubs. You might be allowed in some, but none that are televised. That's how hypersensitive we become today. That's what it is. Tomorrow, I'll give you my thoughts about the whole idea that Bernie Sanders didn't stick into the convention, which I believe he should have. And now, let's see, he'll be endorsing Joe Biden as he endorsed Hillary Clinton. And when you endorse someone, keep in mind, you're actually endorsing everything that they've stood for in the past. And all he has to do is take a look at Joe Biden. You're endorsing that, just like Hillary Clinton. You endorse that. Yeah, that's how it works. But those thoughts are for tomorrow. Thank you all for listening and watching. We don't know if you're able to download this or watch it on Skype. But if you are, hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day, everyone.